Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi Birth Tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Laura, and Laura takes us through the pregnancy and birth story with her son Anderson, or Anders. Laura has endometriosis, so she talks us through the discovery of that when she was younger, and then the management of that as she got older and how that sort of impacted her fertility. She did an AMH test which came back quite low, so she had all of that information and decided to do an egg retrieval at the end of 2019. Laura ended up conceiving naturally without any help after that egg retrieval, so she talks us through finding out that she was pregnant and what that whole journey was like. She had an LGA or large baby on board, and she knew that from the scans that she was having during her pregnancy, and after meeting with her obstetrician and discussing with her midwife, she decided to have an elective caesarean at the Tauranga Hospital. So she talks us through that whole experience and how that sort of played out. And then Laura takes us through her postpartum period, where she really struggled to get the hang of motherhood, and just the adjustment was, yeah, really massive for Laura. Anders wasn't an overly settled baby, and she just really had a hard time. So Laura talks us through what that was like, and a postnatal depression diagnosis, and being referred to maternal mental health. So a really, really open and honest episode. Some of the stuff that Laura talks about might be confronting for some of you, and for others it might be a realization that you're absolutely not alone. But either way, I hope that you love the episode. I'm super grateful that Laura was willing to share it with us, and I would absolutely love to hear from you. If you're listening, feel free to take a screenshot on your phone and upload it to your story and tag me at Kiwi Birth Tales on Instagram. I love to see where you're listening from and what you're doing. Otherwise, feel free to send me an Instagram message or an email, kiwibirthtales@gmail.com. I just, yeah, really love connecting with you all. And I hope you love the episode. I will absolutely stop talking now and let's jump into it. Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, no worries.
Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Laura. I've got my husband, Mitch, and we have little 10, nearly 11-week-old bubba called Anderson, who we call Anders. We live over in Tauranga. I just moved over from Hamilton about nearly a year ago now, yes. And we're just loving it over here, which is really cool. Yeah, and so we just moved over there. I'm a scuba nurse and my husband is an engineer.
Awesome, cool. And do you want to take us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you guys?
Yeah, sure. So I was diagnosed with endometriosis when I was about 16. Pretty much from the start, when I started getting my period, had really bad pain. And I'm really lucky. My mum was a bulldog and really advocated for me to get seen and treated, because it can be really hard to get diagnosed. Yeah. I was diagnosed with surgery probably about a year after investigating, which is really amazing. So had surgery for it, had a marina put in, and that was kind of that. Didn't really think about it. You know, fast forward you know, maybe 7-8 years later, decided that didn't really love the marina, had started getting some more endo pain back. And, you know, at that point, you're starting to think about fertility and kids and how that all affects things. So I went in for another surgery to get the endo cleared out, got my marina taken out as well. And I also got my AMH levels tested, which is a test of your ovarian reserve, because I wanted to know, you know, is it going to be hard for me to have kids, or, you know, is it something that's going to be easy? And it was on the low side. So my doctor pretty much said to me, yeah, it is going to be really hard for you to have kids, which was really devastating to hear at the time. It's like, you know, for me, the biggest dream to have a family. So that was real hard for me. So I made the decision to collect some eggs. So we did a couple of rounds of egg retrieval, and that was at the end of 2019. So I kind of just started going into that, you know, world of all that stuff. And even the egg retrieval was hard, injections and things like that. I know some people have it way, way worse, but I still found it quite tough. So I was kind of working under the assumption that it was going to be really hard to get pregnant. And, you know, that was the mindset. Yeah, had the marina out in January of 2020 when I had surgery for endo again. And, yeah, ended up pregnant in July, which was definitely unexpected. And, yeah, especially when you're told, yeah, this is going to be really hard for you. And then it happens. It's like, wow, that is really, really amazing. So,
And were you, like, tracking your cycles or using any form of contraception, or you were just completely unexpected and it just happened?
Yeah, completely unexpected. I was tracking my cycles, but it was purely from a I want to get to know my body point of view. Because I had the marina for about 8 years, I didn't actually know what my body did. I didn't know how my cycle was. I just wanted to know what my body was doing. And from that tracking, I was doing my temperature and all that kind of stuff as well, kind of worked out that I was ovulating maybe every second or third month. So it wasn't, you know, and we weren't exactly careful, because I thought it was going to be really hard for me to get pregnant. So, you know, it was definitely unexpected, but really, really amazing.
Yeah, cool. And how did you find out? Did you have, like, symptoms that made you think you might be pregnant, or what was the journey there?
Really funny way how I found out. I was actually on a girls' trip down in Queenstown with a couple of friends, so had spent the week snowboarding and eating all the soft cheeses and doing all the fun activities that you're not supposed to do when you're pregnant. And it was the last night of our trip. My period was due the next day. I didn't have anything or any reason to suspect I was pregnant, but we were going to go out to the casino and get a couple of drinks. And I'm just super, super careful about, you know, drinking and, you know, if you're pregnant and stuff like that. And just this little thought came into my head. I was like, oh, what if? And I was like, nah, totally not. That's not possible at all. And so the girls were like, no, we'll just go down to the supermarket and get a quick pregnancy test, then we can go to the casino. I was like, okay, cool. That sounds like a great idea. So we went and did that, and it was like 8 o'clock at night, and like I think it was -5 degrees and public bathrooms in the middle of Queenstown. And found out I was pregnant that way. And my friends thought I was joking. I came in to show them the stick, and they were like, holy crap.
Holy shit.
So, and then 5 minutes later, went and called my husband. I was like, Mitch, I'm pretty sure we're pregnant, and both just freaked out over the phone. Earlier that day, like, I had gotten a tattoo on my stomach, which in hindsight was really not my best choice. And I got it of a pineapple, which is like symbolic of like infertility, because that was something I'd really struggled with. And so quite ironic that the day I get a tattoo that, you know, symbolizes infertility, I find out I'm pregnant that night.
Oh my gosh, crazy.
So it's pretty funny. So flew back the next day, and Mitch met me at the airport, and we're very excited, but like freaking out a little bit at the time. But it was really amazing though.
Awesome, cool. And what was the first trimester like for you? Did you have sort of pregnancy like symptoms that started from there, or how did you find those first 12 weeks?
I found it pretty hard, to be honest. Like, the in terms of physical stuff, it wasn't too bad. I definitely had morning sickness probably from about 7 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. I only vomited for a few weeks, and that ended kind of at about 16 weeks. I started to not feel permanently car sick, so that was good. But I had a couple of rounds of minor bleeding in the first trimester, which was terrifying because, you know, every time you go to the toilet and you check, you're like, is there blood? You know, am I in a miscarry? Like, that was a real big fear for me, and it caused me so much anxiety. Like, and at the time, the midwife that I did have, I really struggled to get in contact with her. Which was quite hard. So, like, I'd call or text and then get a reply a couple of days later. So ended up going with a different midwife after that kind of situation, just because I wanted to be sure that I could, you know, get into touch with someone when I had to. But that caused quite a lot of anxiety for me. Just, you know, that, oh my goodness, I'm bleeding. But everything was fine in the end, and had a few extra scans just to make sure things were fine. But just the normal tiredness, feeling sick, you know.
How did you go with finding a midwife when you were already, like, I know that it can be really difficult finding a midwife even if you're like 4 weeks pregnant. So how did you go?
It was so hard
sort of swapping.
Because I worked in Skibo, I was about 10 weeks and I was trying to find a midwife. And so one day I was at work, I went down to the maternity ward in tears and I'm like, I can't find a midwife. Someone needs to help me. What do I do? And one of the charge midwife there, she said, here's someone that's really great, recommended me, called her up, and she's like, yeah, I can take you on. So that was amazing. And that was such like a big, you know, weight off my shoulders, because I'd been a couple of weeks without a midwife and I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? So that was really cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And what was the rest of your pregnancy experience like? Did you do all of the sort of standard testing that's offered, and did you end up finding out the sex of your baby?
Yeah. So I did the NIPT testing, but I kind of did a slightly different version. Like, you can do one like going through Australia and it was about half the price, but I didn't do like all the genetic stuff. I just wanted to know the gender. We did that and found out it was a boy. We did all the other testing, but we turned down the Down syndrome screening, just because for us it didn't really make a difference. And I knew if there was any issues with that, because Down syndrome can have, you know, some heart conditions associated with it, would probably find that out at the 20-week anatomy scan anyway, if there was any heart kind of issues. So that was, from that perspective, I was like, yeah, we're sweet with just not knowing, and just, because we're pretty young and, you know, hopefully things generally go okay. So, but apart from that, pretty much the standard testing. The second trimester was pretty good. Didn't have too many symptoms, you know, just tired and, you know, the growing bump and just trying to move around becomes a little trickier. I started probably at about 23-ish weeks, started to get these random stomach pains, which was really, really weird. Like, it would be on my lower left side, and it wasn't like constipation or gas or anything like that. And we couldn't work out what it was from, and so I'd get these random bouts of pain from about then onwards, and it would kind of happen every few weeks up until delivery, which was really odd. And so I ended up in hospital a couple of times with that, because the only thing that could really control it was some heavy painkillers. So that was, that was really frustrating for me, because no one could kind of pinpoint what it was. And someone did suggest that maybe it was, you know, like adhesions or something from the endometriosis that, you know, when was stretching out as I was growing, it could have been from that. But before I gave birth, like at that point, like, I was getting those pains every second or third day. So it was becoming, not very fun by the end of it. But, so second trimester wasn't too bad. Just, and those pains probably dominated a bit of the third trimester for me. Which was frustrating, but, couldn't do much about it and just control it.
That is frustrating. And did you do the gestational diabetes screening?
Yes, I did. I had to do it twice. I did have growth scans. So little man was and is a chonker. So he was measuring on, I think, the 95th to 97th centile from 20 weeks onwards. But I'm like 190 centimeters tall. My husband's just about the same height. So we were never going to have a small baby. So, you know, the baby was the right size for us. But yeah, he was never going to be small. So had growth scans. And the way I was eating, I was like, surely my sugar levels are going to be terrible. But they were fine. Yeah. I had it checked out. I can't remember how many weeks the first one, but it's 36 weeks and it was absolutely fine. So
yeah.
And to be honest, like everyone was telling me, oh, the sugar drink is terrible, but I really liked it because I had a real sweet tooth. So yeah, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
It was more just the sitting there waiting.
Yeah. That is painful, that waiting part.
Yeah.
Cool. And did you do like any antenatal classes or birth education, like any sort of educational materials that you found helpful in the lead up to your birth?
Yeah, I was a little stressed and like, you know, I'd had a bit of anxiety the first trimester. I kind of just needed to take a chill pill and relax. So we did some hypnobirthing classes, which I found really helpful. I really enjoyed them and it was a nice small class. There was only like two or three other couples as well. And that was in Tauranga. And it just gave me some tools just to kind of calm myself down and the deep breathing and the different ways to breathe through birth and labour. I found that really helpful. Some bits were good. Some bits I was like, oh, I don't know that I'll use that. But it was one of those things that you kind of pick the parts that are going to be really helpful for you. I was really slack and didn't get into proper antenatal classes. And I didn't, So we didn't end up doing them. We just did the hypnobirthing. We kind of already had the how to change a nappy, how to swaddle a baby. Covered with work. So we did some lessons with Mitch, my husband. We did like swaddling the teddy bear and putting a nappy on him and stuff like that. I guess a lot of those are to, you know, meet people and make connections. We kind of did that with hypnobirthing, which was cool. And where I was working as well, in Skibo, I was one of six pregnant nurses at the time.
Oh, wow.
So there was like a big community like of other mums, you know, that I was connected with there. So it wasn't like I was on my own little island, which was awesome. So but the hypnobirthing was good though. It gave us some good tools to just relax and just not worry about things and just let it come as it happens.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. And did you have much of like a birth plan or thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go?
Yeah, definitely. Like I'm super type A. So like I had this little birth plan like typed up and like got it laminated and stuff. But it was more things for Mitch. Like how you can support me during the birth, because I kind of knew what I wanted, but it was more for the people around me. Like here are some ways that you can help like while I'm in labor. Like what would I find helpful, like, you know, give me a cold cloth or remind me to go to the toilet or, you know, drink water, or if we have a C-section, here are some things you can do. So that was kind of what I did. In terms of actual birth plan for me, I was kind of just seeing how things went. I wasn't too stressed. I knew I wanted to birth up at the hospital. I work up there, so I'm really comfortable up there. I know for some people it's such a foreign environment and, you know, the smell and all the, you know, the stark colours and stuff is not for them. But for me, I'm like, oh, this feels like home. I'm so used to this. And I was like, yeah, I want to be up there and I feel safe. And, you know, you've got doctors and all the staff up there. So for me, that was like my safe place. And I guess that was pretty much the only preference I really had in my birth plan. How it happened, I wasn't too fussed. I was like, yeah, I'll try to do it naturally. If I need an epidural or pain meds, I'll take it. If I need a C-section, that's sweet as. I was kind of just, waiting to see how it happened.
Yeah.
So go with the flow as a type A person can be.
Yeah. Cool. And did you do anything in preparation for birth, like antenatal expressing or perineal massage or any of the things that they say can help you go into labour?
Yeah, I did antenatal expressing, which was really good. I knew I wanted to do that. So I started that from about 35 weeks and ended up with quite a lot, about maybe 50 mils or so, which was really cool. So just like get into the bath at night and just sit there with my syringes, which was really cool. kind of tried the perineal massage, but I kind of just kept forgetting.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't that I didn't mind it, but I was like, oh, whoops, I forgot it again. Yeah. I bounce on the yoga ball a lot. But I kind of stopped after a while because I read the packet and it was like the max weight is like 100 kilos, and I'm pretty sure like I went past it at that point, and yeah. I'm like, that's going to be really dangerous.
Yeah.
I bought like the raspberry leaf tea. I didn't drink it because I didn't like the taste, and you know, like So I tried a couple of things, but I didn't really like fully like get this baby out of me. Yeah. Because we ended up delivering it 38 weeks and 4 days. So I kind of wasn't at that I'm desperate point. So
Okay. Yeah, nice. And I know that you said you were having like extra growth scans and stuff like that because it was measuring on the bigger side, which I can relate to. So do you want to take us through, I guess, those last couple of weeks before he was born, and did you have any growth scans then? And then did you end up going into labor, or what happened from there?
Yeah, so we had had growth scans the whole way. I think my last growth scan was at about 36 or 37 weeks. And Anders was projected to, at term, be getting close to 5 kilos. And when you hear 5 kilos, you're like, oh, okay, that's quite big. I know those growth scans aren't, you know, the most accurate thing, and they have to be taken with a bit of a grain of salt. But yeah, looking at those scans, me and Mitch had talked about it quite a bit, about, you know, what could happen with the birth. And my midwife referred me to the obstetrician, which I kind of thought was going to happen anyway. So I think at about 37 and a half weeks, we had a meeting with the obstetrician and went in there, and he pretty much looked at us and was like, got a big baby on board. And I was like, yeah. It's like, so what do you guys want to do? So kind of didn't go, here's what we think should happen.
Laura, that is so interesting. It is so interesting hearing you say that, because it's like, it just depends on the obstetrician that you get on the day, right? Like their approach and everything.
Yeah. They are all so different. Amazing, but definitely have different opinions. So he was like, you know, so what are your guys' thoughts? He kind of put it back on us straight away, which was really interesting. And I think I said something along the lines of, I don't want to rip myself in half giving birth to this baby. So I wasn't worried about the actual labor and birth. That is in the pain. That wasn't something that freaked me out. Because like, I work in Skibo, and like, you know, I have kind of a bit of a warped, you know, viewpoint of like labor and birth. So I end up seeing the ones that go wrong a lot of the time,
or the
things that don't end up super well. And I don't get a lot of the picture of, here's a normal birth and here is what a normal birth looks like. So I would see the babies that, you know, really big babies that had ended up with like shoulder dystocia, or, you know, because they were big, or they'd gotten stuck. And I think my biggest fear was laboring, you know, for a couple of days and then ending up with an emergency C-section. And so we kind of said, I kind of put it back on him. I'm like, what do you kind of think? And he kind of recommended a section, but he said, you know, hey, I think that would be the best thing. But it's up to you guys. And I guess because I'd seen the stuff that went wrong, I was like, yep, I want that. I want to do that for the safety of our baby. And that was at the time, you know, I felt that was right for us, and we were confident in that decision, and we were like, yep, awesome, let's do this. This is, you know, going to work for us. That's great. So he booked us in for like just over a week later, which was insane.
They usually wait until after 39 weeks, right?
Yeah, it was to do with like the schedule. I think it might have, I don't know if it was booked up a bit more further down. And he did say to us, he said, oh, well, yeah, we normally wait till 39, but, you know, 38 and I think it was 38 and 5 is okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, cool, sweet as.
Yeah, cool.
It was nice. a very interesting appointment.
Yeah, I'm so like interested in your story, Laura, because it's like the same hospital that I go to just a totally, totally different experience mm-hmm. to what I had when I went and met with the obstetrician that I met with at the hospital. That like, could not be more opposite to that conversation.
Yeah, so interesting, eh? And you do hear the ones that it's like, this is how you should birth, or this is how you should do that. But yeah, for us, it was just like, you know, my gut instinct was like, I feel like the C-section's right for us. And it was nice to not be pushed into that. Mm. So that was good. That was good for us. So,
cool.
It's nice. It's really weird knowing the birthday of your baby before actually having your birthday, like having the baby though. So
Yeah, cool. So how did you sort of prepare, I guess, over the next week? And then do you want to take us through going into the hospital for your C-section and how that all went?
Yeah, totally. So it was, weird. Like I was really, it was quite nerve-wracking because every day it was like, oh, in like 3 days I'm going to meet our baby, in 2 days. So it was, it kind of like messed with your mind a little bit. And so by the time, the day before, I was like, I'm so ready for this now. I guess when the end's in sight, you just get really over it. But the night before, we went out for like a really nice dinner. Some of our friends gave us a voucher for a restaurant in Tauranga, so we went out for dinner, which was so nice, and just relaxed. And Mitch took the day off work the day before Bubba, just so we could spend the day together, like the last day, like just us, and really make the most of that.
Mm.
I can't actually remember what we did. I think we went somewhere or did something, but I actually can't remember now. But yeah, so that was like our preparation. And the morning we woke up, I slept terribly the night before. Woke up, went to the hospital, had to be in there at 7 o'clock. We got in, they do all their admin stuff, got us in the gown, and Mitch was dressed up for theatre. We were first on the list for that day, so we're going in sometime from about 8 at the earliest, 8:30 at the earliest. So, you know, we were going to have our baby pretty quickly. And so the doctor that came in was a different doctor than the one I'd seen about a week and a half before. Really, really lovely. But she just goes to me, oh, before we go in to do the surgery, to do the birth, let me just check the position of baby. So I felt my stomach and then kind of brought up that, oh, baby's sitting a bit low. It actually might be kind of hard to do a section. And then offered to do an internal exam to see like how like low baby was and, you know, what my pelvis was like and stuff like that. So did the internal. And then pretty much said, I think you can birth naturally.
Oh my God, I bet you that was my obstetrician.
Yeah, and was pretty much like, yeah, I think you can have this baby naturally. And there wasn't much discussion around it. And then she's like, I've got another case. I'll be back in an hour to hear your decision. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I just burst into tears as soon as she left. I just turned to Mitch. I'm like, what do we do? Because like all of a sudden I felt really guilty for wanting the section. I was like, this is what we had mentally prepped ourselves for. You know, we were ready for this. We were going to meet our baby today. Like this is where we were at. And my stomach pains had also been ramping up. So it was like every second day, you know, having to take tramadol to control it. So it was, I was just so done. But I felt really guilty for still wanting to have a section.
Yeah.
So I called up my mum and I'm like, what do we do? You know, because you trust your mum in those times.
Yeah.
And me and Mitch just sat there and we prayed about it. And we're like, God, what do we do here? We actually don't know. And talked with my midwife. And we just still felt it was right for us to go through with the section. And we instantly felt peace as soon as we made that decision. We're like, yep, okay, cool. We prepared for this. This is where we're at. You know, we're going to go through with it today.
Did your midwife have a view? Like, what was her thoughts?
Yeah, well, it was hard because the doctor kind of didn't really give alternatives. It wasn't like we can induce you today, or you could just wait and go home and see if you go into labor naturally. So that kind of wasn't discussed, and our midwife kind of talked with us through it. But I remember my midwife looking at me and just being like, you know what you want to do, and go with that gut feeling, you know. I think she said something along those lines. And so she encouraged us just to stick with, you know, what our gut feeling was. And there was no guilt around that. It was like, yeah, you do what's right for you and go with that, which was cool. So there was no, like, you know, guilt tripping or anything like that. It was, so she backed us, which was awesome.
Nice.
So, and so the doctor came back an hour later and she was just like, yay or nay? And I'm like, yeah, we're going for it. And she's like, okay, cool, we'll see you in there in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So, yeah, that was very interesting. Like, it kind of unsettled me quite a bit. And but that was okay. We got through that. So,
Cool. And do you want to take us through the experience of your C-section and meeting your baby?
Yeah. So, yeah, and just completely felt myself go numb, like my lower half, which was, it's really uncomfortable. And quite a, I don't know, I found it quite an icky feeling. And then it kind of spreads its way up, like you kind of feel like the bottom of your like lungs go numb a little bit. Like, and you kind of feel like it's a little bit hard to breathe, but yeah, they just drape me up and Mitch is there holding my hand, and and so I really wanted to see our baby come out. That was like a big thing for me. I wanted to, you know, watch the baby being pulled out of me. And I'd seen like on Instagram in Australia that there's a doctor, and I don't know if it's more than one, but they do maternally assisted C-sections. I love those videos. And so like the mum's gowned up on the table and she actually reaches down and she pulls her baby out. Like the baby's already like half out of the incision and stuff. And I would have loved to have done that, but I don't know that that quite offered that in New Zealand. But if I end up having another C-section one day, I will be pushing for that because that would be so cool. But yeah, so took about 5-10 minutes, you know, for them to do their stuff cutting. You can feel it. It feels like there's a washing machine going on inside you, but it doesn't hurt. And then they lowered the drapes and then, pulled baby out, and I got to watch him like come out of my tummy, which was really cool. And he cried straight away, which was amazing. It was really cool. I just cried. I didn't know if I was going to get emotional or not, but I just remember like my chest just like kind of like going up and down from crying and thinking, oh no, like they're going to make a mistake like stitching me up because I'm crying too much. But then they took him over to the table and he was crying. Well, the doctors checked him out, and then at about, you know, maybe 5 minutes or less, he was brought back to me. And I got to have him on me, which was really, really nice, but also quite uncomfortable because Anders was like, it's just hard when you're lying down. And he came out of the womb hungry. So he was like chewing on my chin, which was really cute, but quite funny. So that was real cool, and gave him to Mitch in the end because I'm like, it's quite uncomfortable on my chest. And so Mitch held him. So the actual birth was really lovely. I really enjoyed the whole, you know, our section. It was very calm. The room felt really peaceful. There was no panic, no fear. And it was a really nice way to meet our baby. Like, I felt it was really awesome. And, that was really nice. So I actually really enjoyed it. And then he got Anders latched on breastfeeding and recovery, and he latched on perfectly straight away, which was incredible. And then we got wheeled through back to the ward after a little bit, and like that night I was up having a shower, walking. It was the whole experience, was the whole section, I really liked that. It was good for us. It worked for us, and it was the right decision for us at the time. So
Awesome. Cool. And how long did you end up spending in the hospital?
I spent 5 days in hospital, which was quite a good amount of time. I felt no pressure to leave. They said to me, you know, don't feel pressure to leave. You know, you guys just, you know, go home when you're ready, which was really cool. So I didn't have that, oh my goodness, you know, I need to get out of here kind of thing. And because I felt comfortable in the environment, it was really good. Anders was a tricky baby from day one. Because I'd had a section, I'd lost a couple of liters of blood. So my milk didn't actually come in properly until like my full supply, like probably a couple of weeks, but it didn't come in really much at all until about day seven. So in hospital, I had a very angry baby that was getting next to nothing off me. So that was really hard. And I was very emotional about that. And it was just a struggle. So I think it was on day two or three. It was about 7 hours and he hadn't fed because he was screaming. I couldn't get him on the breast because I had nothing. He would latch on, suck and scream because there was nothing. So I was getting so desperate at this point. He was inconsolable. He was starting to get a little bit dehydrated. So we ended up needing to give him a little bit of formula, which was absolutely fine. But it can be quite a process getting formula in hospital. Like it's kind of treated a little bit like it's a drug. So they actually need two nurses to sign it out if you're using hospital formula. And at times I kind of was made to feel a little bit guilty about wanting that. But I had an amazing midwife that came in and just said, "Do I need some formula?" I was like, "Yep." She's like, "Awesome. That's the best plan here." So that was amazing. That was really validating for me that, yeah, my gut instinct was right. He did need some just to get through that little period of, And because he was a bigger bubby too, he was at risk of having low blood sugars. So I didn't want that to be the case. And that worked for us. So we ended up breastfeeding and then he would do lactate top-ups with some formula. So the little tube and the syringe, and he just guzzled them. It was amazing. So we had a bit of a happier baby after that, but he never was much of a settled little man, unfortunately.
Cool. And so how did you find going home from the hospital? And obviously, like, just everything has changed and your whole world's like flipped upside down. So recovering from a C-section as well obviously throws like another spanner in the works. So how did you find after those 5 days in hospital going home and adjusting to life as a mum?
Yeah, it was really hard. Physically, I recovered really well. After a couple of weeks, I felt pretty much nearly my normal self. Didn't really have any pain left. It was quite weird. I thought it was going to be a bit harder with the section. I guess I was one of the lucky ones that found the recovery pretty easy. I was back playing pretty competitive netball at 5.5 weeks post-section, which I probably shouldn't have been doing. But that was more for my mental health, even though my body wasn't quite ready for that. So yeah, the physical recovery, to be honest, was not too bad at all. It was everything else around it. Anderson has been a real tricky bub, and he's since been diagnosed with silent reflux, which we didn't know at the time, but he was never settled in hospital. And so we got him home, still wasn't settling with the feeding and everything. And he had symptoms of it, but it's one of those really hard things to get diagnosed.
Yeah.
It was really, really difficult. So our feeding was really hard with him. Like, I had a really good supply. He was a brilliant breastfeeder, but he would just want to suck and suck and suck and not go off the breast at all. And so he would do that when we were home, and then it'd end up projectile vomiting because he would take too much. So that was, it was a bit of a nightmare. And he was really gaggy, and you could see it coming up the back of his throat, and like he was in obvious pain. So we eventually got diagnosed with silent reflux. Mentally, I found things really difficult. It's a huge adjustment that no one really talks about. I did so much more prep for the actual birth than I did the fourth trimester, and I wish I was more prepared. But yeah, it was really interesting. So I talked to Mitch before Bubba was born, just about postnatal depression and anxiety, and I said, look, we had recently moved to Tauranga, so like I didn't know a massive amount of people, so didn't have those social circles around me. I'd had anxiety at the start of the pregnancy. my mum had had postnatal depression. You know, like we had a baby with reflux, or we didn't know that obviously before the birth, but there are a few risk factors. And I said, hey, I just want you to look out for this just in case that's something that crops up and that it happens for us so we can get onto it really quickly. So in hindsight, I'm so glad we had those conversations because we did get onto that quickly. But yeah, there was so much. It was just things that you don't even think about. I felt real grief. You completely lose who you are all of a sudden, and it's just a complete identity shift. You're like, all of a sudden, like, one minute you're not a mum, and then you're a mum, and your entire world changes. And it's, that's not a small thing. I really felt like a loss of freedom. It was like Groundhog Day. Like, I was stuck in the house all day, every day. Once I got home from hospital, you know, your relationship changes with your husband and your family because it's all about a baby. You used to have all this time, like, you know, me and Mitch would like go on dates all the time, and like it was about me and him, not a child. So that relationship shifts, and like I felt grief for that for a period of time. And just the general adjustment to being a mum, and then you've got all this mum guilt because you feel like you're doing everything terribly wrong. So yeah, I found that really hard. And so that coupled with, I think from the moment we were told, oh, you can deliver naturally, and then, you know, I found being in the hospital quite hard and a little bit traumatic for us with all his issues, like feeding, and, you know, he didn't settle, didn't sleep really much at all. And then coming home and then trying to deal with that and then trying to actually get him diagnosed, kind of developed a bit of postnatal depression, which has been quite hard. I had weeks I was like, nah, I just, this is my life now. There's nothing to look forward to. Just crying all the time. My appetite just completely went. Even though I was breastfeeding, I had no appetite whatsoever. And if people weren't feeding me, I wouldn't have been eating at all. Was just completely flat. Just no emotion. Just, I loved Anderson. And I still felt connected to him, but I just really hated the new role of mum all of a sudden. And I just found that adjustment so difficult. So I kind of felt like that for a couple of weeks. And at first I was like, oh, it's just the baby blues, you know, it'll pass, it'll be fine. And then after a couple of weeks, between me, my mum and Mitch, we were like, hold on, this kind of isn't shifting now. The fog isn't lifting at all. Things aren't getting better. So we got some help at that point, which was great. So we did a couple of things. The first thing for me was getting the reflux sorted with Anderson. So we went over to Hamilton, to the Waikato Family Centre, which is such an amazing place. They have like nurses and midwives there, and you just go, you take your babies, and they pretty much just help you figure out like if you're having sleeping issues or feeding issues or reflux issues. So that was amazing. They don't have something the same in Tauranga, but so we went over to Hamilton, and they gave me a checklist of like reflux symptoms, and I ticked every single one apart from like vomiting all the time. So straight away it was like, oh, cool, okay, that's confirmation, validation that this is what's going on. And then we got Anders onto the right medication, which made a really big difference. He's not perfect, and he's still definitely got some stuff going on, but it's so much better. So that was the first thing we did. And then I went to the GP for myself. I've got a really amazing GP practice that we go to, which was really cool. And they listened to me. And I had been on like a little bit of medication for anxiety pre-pregnancy. And so went back onto that same medication, which helps kind of with anxiety and depression. And then also had a referral to maternal mental health in Tauranga, and had a nurse come out and see me a couple of times, which was amazing. And so we are doing so much better now. Like, we're not completely there, but so, so much better than when we left the hospital, and, you know. So that was really cool. So for us, it was the early recognition. We knew that this wasn't quite normal, and we got on top of it really quickly. While we were kind of just falling off the cliff instead of being at rock bottom, at the bottom of the cliff. So we kept ourselves from getting completely to that point, which was, yeah, the best thing we possibly could have done. So,
Yeah.
For sure.
And when you talk about the maternal mental health nurse, do you just want to talk us through like what she actually does? So for someone who might be in a similar position to you, how does she help?
Yeah, I was honestly really nervous about this because as part of my job, like I had referred like a lot of women to maternal mental health, but really had no idea. And it sounds so big and serious, like, oh my goodness, there's something terribly wrong with you. It's so not like that at all. It was just like a nurse that came to my house and pretty much just sat down, had a cup of tea with me and just talked with me for like an hour. It was no big weird things. And, you know, she was a mum herself. She was amazing, really, really helpful and just helped to recognize what I was feeling, just validated what I was feeling, and yeah, pretty much outlined here are some services that could help, which was kind of what I was looking for too, like what support groups are there, who can I get in connection with that could help with this, just talked about what would be useful with in terms of medication and stuff like that. So I'm so glad that we did that, so we only ended up seeing her twice. And after the second time seeing her, she said to us, you're coping really well now. We've gotten on top of things. Anderson's reflux is doing so much better. And what she said to me, it was more of a, so it wasn't a really, really bad, really dark postnatal depression. She said it was more situational. You know, we'd had a tricky stay in hospital. I'd struggled with the adjustment of being a mum. Anderson had been a really hard baby. There wasn't much sleep going on because he would refuse to nap during the day. We'd get maybe 10, 20 minutes of naps if that, so I couldn't nap during the day. Yeah. And as he got better, I got better. Yeah. And so we saw her twice and then, yeah, she said, you guys are actually doing a lot better now. I'm here if you guys need anything. You're always welcome to make contact again if things go downhill or if things become a bit more of a struggle. So yeah, just left it kind of open that we can contact her if we need her, which was, yeah, which is amazing to know that that's there, but a really, really good service. And honestly, anyone feeling the same way, I would just so encourage them just to go to your GP, get a referral, you know, just talk to someone before it gets really bad. It's a lot easier to get stuff sorted when it's kind of starting to go downhill and things aren't feeling quite right. You know, don't wait till it's bad. Just talk to someone about it. It makes all the difference in the world.
I think that's great advice and will be super helpful for other people out there who are feeling a similar way. So thank you. Cool. And is there anything else that we sort of haven't covered, Laura, that you want to include in your story or anything that you feel like we've missed?
I think the biggest takeaway for me is I wish I had done more planning for the fourth trimester, just about what that would look like. And I know you can only plan to an extent because you don't know what it's going to look like and you don't know how you're going to feel at that time. But yeah, I wish I was more prepared for that and for what that might look like. And I guess I had these thoughts in my head. I was like, I know what I'm doing with babies, you know, that's my job, I'm gonna be good at this, you know. And then when it doesn't end up like that, you take such a hit because it's expectation versus reality. And I really struggled, you know. I'd see all these mums, you know, you'd get into the Instagram like stalk and you'd see all these mums that just like looked perfect and looked like they were just loving life and having the best time. And you go, how come that's not me? Why am I not loving this? Why am I not enjoying this? So I realized it's actually okay to not enjoy those first few weeks because they are really hard. You love your baby, but it can be really hard. But yeah, I guess my biggest takeaway is I'm really glad that we got help and we did. You know, we're doing so much better now. I'm starting to enjoy being a mum, like. We've got a baby that's smiling and giggling now, which is so cool. And it's just, it's so worth it. But access those services, that's my biggest encouragement. And just talk to someone if you're not feeling quite right. It makes a difference in the world. And it is really hard, though. It's hard admitting that things aren't right. It makes you very vulnerable. And you want people to think that you've got it all together. No one would be able to have, like, looked at me and gone, oh, she's struggling. My house was always really tidy. You know, I'd put on makeup, even in hospital, get myself presentable, looked like I totally had it all together. That it's often those ones, I think, that are the ones that are, you know, behind the scenes, kind of falling to bits a little bit. So,
yeah.
It was all just a bit of an act. And it's really easy to do that. So, yeah, just be honest. And the one thing we also did as well before Bubba was born is we, well, I joined a group in Tauranga called The Force, which is amazing. Yep. It was just like a postnatal group where they do fun things, learn about bubs, that kind of stuff. Just so I knew I had some kind of connection. And I'd be regularly meeting with other mums and babies, and that was the best thing as well because it means you get out of the house and, yeah, so that was fabulous. So, yeah, but nothing else I can think of too much. That's kind of our story, and, yeah, we've got a happy little bubba now and a far happier mum, so that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to hear that. And I think, I just am really grateful that you've sort of talked openly about that because I think it will resonate with lots of people out there and hopefully encourage some to go and get the help that they need. So thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, so important, hey?
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. Well, thank you, Laura, for joining me on the podcast. Like I said, super grateful for your honesty, and I know that lots of people are going to love your episode. So thank you.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. I would love to hear from you if you want to send me an Instagram message or an email or tag me in a story if you want to post where you're listening from and what you're up to while you're listening. I absolutely love seeing that. Otherwise, I will talk to you again next week in another awesome episode.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.